Oh boy, okay, thank you very much. Well, I love Maddie, you know. I go to a men's meeting on every day, ever since Zoom came in. My deal has been at 6 o'clock in the morning, almost every day I'm at a meeting where there's about 50 people that show up, and we sing hymns and we quote scripture, and then at 7 o'clock there's another meeting that I go to, and then at 12 o'clock I go to the men's meeting. There's anywhere between 60 and 110 men, and like 30% of them have over 40 years or 30 years. They had a birthday party the other day, and this is the way it started out. It says, okay, our first celebrant has 26 years. That was the low man on the totem pole, you know, up to 51 years. And I love hanging out with those. I'm 72 years old. I've been sober a little over 40 years. So I love hanging around with those guys, you know. It's over for us. We're short timers. It's adios. I'm just trying to make it through the meeting. You know what I mean? And so I love Maddie. Maddie's in New Jersey. I understand that. Sheldon was supposed to be here. Help me with Zoom. I have all my Zoom friends. I love you guys, you know, that are on here now. And he was going to be doing this Zoom thing for me. And I'm like letting him in and doing this double duty at the same time and trying to figure that out. So Maddie's not here. Sheldon's not here. Who else? Not? Stevie B., who I've sponsored for 2 million years, you know, who has advised everybody that I steal everything from him. He's not here. Now, of course, I understand that it is Ladies Night at Hooters. So I understand. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know. You know, there's been talk. But I think he's probably, he likes to do special evangelism down there, you know, private evangelism. So in any event, look, if you don't show up, I'm going to talk about you. That's just the way it is. I'm not behind your back. You know, just put it on tape. You know what I mean? And that's it. So so it's good to be. I have no idea what I'm going to say. We just let the Holy Spirit take over. He does a better job than I do. And, you know, so many things go through my head. You know, when you come today, you don't really have much of a story. And you don't even know anything about yourself. I mean, that's the truth. You don't know anything. I don't know how many of you were at the meeting last night, but you do is, you know, story one. You know some sort of story, because the nature of alcoholism is we're delusional. We don't know the truth from the false. And so you have some sort of story you've been telling yourself. It's like, it's not my fault. I'm not to blame. They're all a bunch of assholes. You know, I wouldn't have done it to them if they didn't do it to me. And, if only this, if only that, and, you know, you're just a victim, and you come in here, your whole life you've been a victim, you felt sorry for yourself, you felt justified in everything you did, and you're absolutely sure of it, and that's your story, and that's going to kill you. You know, my sponsor used to say, he said, why do you do the things you're doing? This is after I got sober. I mean, I wish I could blame alcohol on everything I did, all the crap I did. Most of the people I heard them cold stone sober. I wish I could say I drank, and that's why I lied. I drank, that's why I didn't show up. I drank, that's why I made an excuse. I drank, that's why I didn't pay the money back after 10 years. You know what I mean? Because I was drunk the whole time. I wish I could say that. I can. The only thing drinking didn't cause me to do any of the bad stuff. Most of the stuff I did to hurt people, I did cold stone sober. And many of the actions and attitudes I had that allowed me to hurt people, I did them after I stopped drinking cold stone sober, thus the 10th step and everything like that. The only thing alcohol allowed me to do is live with my sorry ass self while I was doing it and just drink it, you know, drink the guilt away, drink the fear away and all that sort of stuff. So the bomb is on my spot. Said, why do you do the things you do? And I said, well, it's my personality, you know, my sparkling personality. He says, well, your personality is killing you. You know, I knew how to stop drinking. How do you stop your person? I've been living with my personality. I came in when I was 31. I've had the same 30. He thought I was a pretty good guy. Most alcoholics, good. They finally closed up Hooters. You know, you don't show up. You know, the meeting starts at 8. You know, you don't show up. You're going to have to ask. I'm afraid you're going to have to ask somebody else about that. You know, I'm not going to clue you in on it. I was wondering why you weren't here, and then somebody pointed out it's Ladies Night at Hooters, and so I was giving you an excused absence, because I know you were suffering for Jesus down there, and you know, trying to spread the gospel message. That's where the sinners are. I understand what's going on. Okay, I get it. So. That's it. Well, we're not a glum lot, are we? You know, Rule 62. Don't take yourself too seriously. So he said, you know, I mean, how do you change your personality? I mean, I can stop drinking. How do you change your attitude and the way you are and that kind of stuff? And that only takes about 25, 30 years. And that's the truth. By the way, I'm telling you the truth. But you can ignore it and laugh and giggle about it. But they used to say, when I came in, they would say, my sponsor said to me, I don't consider you, look, I don't talk a lot about drinking. I mean, I could tell you drunk stories. I can do a drunk log. You'll say, yeah, he's a drunk. You know, I mean, you'd have to be crazy to show up at these meetings if you weren't an alcoholic. But I mean, I could tell you drunk log stories. I'm not going to do that because that's not really the problem. You know, for every 2,000 people I have met over 40 years, for every 2,000 people, maybe more, that I have heard, because I've never met anybody. I'm sure there's probably some people out there. I don't know everybody in AA, but I've never met anybody in AA who comes to an AA meeting that doesn't stop drinking. I've never met one person that comes to an AA meeting, picks up a white chip with a desire to stop and doesn't stop. They may only stop for a week. They may stop for a month. They may stop for 5 years. They may stop for 10 years. I know guys that stop for 20 years. I know guys that stop for 30 years and they drink again. 2000, I can't tell you how many people, how many times I've heard the story. I was sober for 10 years and then I drank. I mean, maybe you haven't gone to enough meetings if you haven't heard those stories. I remember the first time I saw a guy who had 30 years pick up a white chip. I was like, dumbfounded. I mean, we only have two rules in here. You got to drink to get here. Once you get here, you're supposed to stop, you know? But I mean, the bottom line, I mean, when I saw a guy with 30 years pick up a white chip, I was, see, what I thought was this. This is what I honestly thought this. I was crazy. I thought you come in here and you pick up a white chip and then you never drink again. I mean, I did it one day at a time. I understand I had to do it one day at a time, but it never occurred to me that after you stopped drinking, you would go back. And then I would see these men going back all the, you see it all the time. I had 3 years and then I stopped going to meetings. I had 5 years and I stopped going to meetings. I got 10 years and then I drank. I had 20 years. I had 15 years. And they say things sort of make us feel better, like, well, I stopped going to meetings. Oh, that's the key. That's the key. I'll just, you know what I said? I said, I'll just never stop going to meetings. And then you realize that these bananas that drank again at one time were sitting in my seat and they were saying the same thing. I'll just never stop going to meetings. And they stopped. Yep. Worldly clamors, whatever, because they stop.
Yep.
So just, you know, saying to yourself, I'll never stop going to meetings is like saying to yourself, I'm not going to drink anymore.
Right.
I've never said I'm not going to drink anymore. I've never said I'm never going to drink again. Every time somebody said I'm never going to drink again, they drink. Mm-hmm. I know why they drink, because they have lost the concept that they're powerless over alcohol. So who needs God? Who needs religion? Who needs church? Who needs Jesus? Who needs any of that stuff? I made a decision. I'm never going to drink again. I don't need to go to a meeting. I can evangelize down at Hooters or something. I don't know. I can go where I want to go, you know? Whenever I hear people saying they're never going to drink again, they've totally missed. How do you keep that first? How do you keep that attitude I had? Because I'm an egotistical, selfish, arrogant son of a bitch. That is me. How do you keep that attitude that I had when I stood up in front of 50 people? 50 people didn't even know me. You know, 31 years old, a former division chief for the state attorney's office, major crimes prosecutor, going for my department of honors in mathematics, my PhD in algebraic topology. How do you stand up in front of people, the brightest guy in the room? How do you stand up in front of people, 50 people you don't even know, and sort of walk to the front room and pick up a white chip and declare basically that you need help because you can't stop drinking? How do you get to, I'll tell you how you get to that point. You get desperate. Never rob an alcoholic. It was desperation. Never rob an alcoholic is last thing. But here's the key. My sponsor said, you know, the problem with alcoholics, they get too well too fast. You know, you get all the stuff back, you get all the toys back, you stop drinking. How do you keep that attitude of that fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom? How do you keep the attitude of fear of the drink is the beginning of wisdom? Understanding your powerless. Listen, there is one who has all power. That one is God. Period. There is one who has all power. That one is God. God has all the power. Your real reliance has to be on God. You know, that a new guy coming in here needs to know that, needs to hear that. You know who needs to hear that more than a new guy? Guy with 10 years, guy with 5 years, guy with 3 months, guy with 40 years. He needs to hear it and believe it and understand it, you know, so he can give his life to God. See, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come past you and countless others. So we can make a serious decision for God, because our real problem is alcoholic selfishness. We must get rid of it or it'll kill us. God makes that possible. Not the drinking. The drinking. You listen, for every 3,000 people that drink again and drink again and come back again and get 3 years together, 5 years together, one guy, with over 30 years. And for every one guy with over 30 years, for every 20 guys with over 30 years, three guys that have happy, contented sobriety. 27 guys that are sucking on the barrel of a gun and lonely. You know, they get sober, they don't get rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven. You know, their heart isn't full for the Lord. You know, I was told if you get the age of 30 and you have no idea why you're on the planet and who you are, you're going to be to a certain extent neurotic. And I was one neurotic son of a bitch when I came here. I got to tell you something. I came here, as bright as I was, I had two neurons working. They were waving goodbye to each other. You know, they're saying goodbye. You know, that was it. It was over for me. So I'm going to talk a little bit. I like to talk about sobriety, emotional sobriety. Because the truth is when somebody drinks, I know all about the craving crap. Let me tell you something. There's not a person in here that has a problem with the craving. I know all about it. You're an alcoholic. You can't take the first. I know there's not one person in here that has a problem with craving alcohol. I'll tell you what it does say in the big book. It says, but we won't know you. He says, we can't be sure of that because your real reliance has to be with God. He will show you how to connect with the fellowship you crave. Did you know you crave fellowship? Did you know that? And you crave fellowship so bad, you're going to fellowship with somebody. You're either going to fellowship with us or fellowship with believers, or you're going to fellowship down at Hooters. So you're going to fellowship with somebody. You know what I mean? Or even worse, you're going to fellowship with yourself. And let me tell you something. The worst person you ever want to have a conversation with is you. Now, let me tell you something else. And here's your problem. The only person you ever talk to is you. The only person you ever talk to is you. You have incredibly unbelievable conversations with you. Sometimes you got like 5 or 10 yous in you. They're all fucking psychotic. You wish you could not talk to you. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're talking to you. If you could only stop talking to you, and the only way you can stop talking to you is if you're talking to Jesus. If you're fellowship with Jesus, because the one way to get rid of that, because you want to, we can't separate the truth from the false. Our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It seems normal. It's normal for us to talk to ourselves all the time. We say things like, I can't believe this crap is happening to me. This is a bunch of crap. They can't do that to me. They don't know who they're screwing with. I'll show them. If only I had this, I'd be okay. If only I had that, I'd be okay. You know, I can't believe, it never works out for me. I mean, I know the conversations you have with you. I'm never going to be okay. I'm a piece of crap. I'm a loser. I might as well kill myself. This thing ain't going to work for me. What the hell is wrong with me? I know you have all these great conversations with you. You don't even know where they come from. What the hell did that conversation come from? How do you expect to act and feel and react to people when you've lived 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, and every day, every hour of the day, you're conversing with yourself that way? So you say, well, you know, I sort of see what you're saying, and you know, you're right. That's what happens. That is my life. That is my life. But how do I stop it? My sponsor used to say, I don't consider you sober. 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 Emotionally, you know, when old timers talk about sober, they're not talking about not drinking. Nobody here has an alcohol craving. If you go out and drink tonight, it's not because you crave alcohol. If you drink tonight, if you drink 10 years from now, it's not because you crave alcohol. It's because you have no program and you haven't worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's because you have no connection with God.
That's right.
That's why we have to constantly improve our connection with God. Because you want to know something? The devil's out there like a roaring lion looking to devour you, and you got to put on the full armor of God, and you get strong with him every day because you want to know something? The disease is getting stronger, and you can't let up. And you want to know something? As soon as you let, when you drink, it's not because your mother died or your cousin got sick, right? It's because I've seen people in here with as bad situations or worse, and they don't drink because they believe in the Lord and they trust in the Lord. You know, that's the deal. And they believe, like it says in the book, that if we make a sincere decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. And they believe that for year after year after year after year, so they finally hit the sixth step. The sixth step, bringing, they're giving everything to God. The sixth step is the real third step. The third step, you get down on your knees, you give your life to God, you read the prayer, you know, you get up and say, oh, I've done it already. Now I'll take it from here, God. Thank you very, very much. I finally done the third step. I'm the Pope. You know what I mean? And then you threw in the towel, then you snatched it back, ripped off strips and thought that was satisfying. You know what I mean? And that's it. Thanks. Stay out of my sex life. Stay out of my money. Spending money you don't have, buying crap you don't need to impress people you don't like. You know, stay out of this and don't mind that. And you do your program, I'll do my program. And nobody's got a program because nobody's doing a program because what they're doing is they're doing what they want to do. And I'm going to look at the God of my own understanding, you know, the God that basically gets me, allows me to get away with all sorts of bullshit. You know what I mean? He says, that's okay. You're okay. No problem. Go on. Keep on doing it, you know. You know, not having a sponsor that's really talking. Yeah, I mean, this disease is so incredible. But that's what it says. God will give me everything I need if I stay close to my performance book. Well, it says we're on a new basis, base of trust, relying upon God. It says we never apologize for God. In AA, all they do is sit around ashamed of being talked about God. They sit there scared to say God. They say higher banana, you know, the guy, the this, the pickle, you know, whatever it is. Don't say God. God forbid you say Jesus, they'll shoot you. You know why? Because they're ashamed to talk about God because they're scared of what other people think about them. Those people, let me tell you a little secret. Anybody here, you don't have to raise your hand because you're not going to do it anyway because you're scared to. But if I was to say, how many people are worried about what other people think about them? Raise your hand. And the other ones are liars. Why do you think they don't? You know they are because they're alcoholics. All alcoholics do is tell themselves and other people, I don't give a shit what other people think about me. Why do you think they act the way they do? Why do you think they say the way they do? Why do you think 90% of them, if you ask them to come up here and speak for an hour, they'll say, I'm not ready. That's alcohol kofra. I'm scared. They'll laugh at me. They're all scared. They're scared to raise their hand to say they're scared. You know what I mean? They come into my office and says, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that, I'm worried about this. I said, I understand what you got. You got fear. He says, no, I didn't say that. I'm just worried. It's just so, we're delusional. We're selfish. We're self-centered. We're filled with delusion. We tell ourselves lies. We tell everybody, I don't give a crap about what other people think about me. This guy doesn't know me. I don't give a shit about anybody. You know what I mean? And you ultimately realize if you want to live in the truth, is that people that are constantly telling themselves that they don't care about what other people think about them, all they do is worry about what other people think about them, because people that really don't care what other people think about them never say, I don't care what other people think about me. They never have that conversation. They say things like, pass the ketchup, or where are we going for dinner? But they never say that stuff, you know? And I go to meetings, and people are scared, and they don't even know they're scared. They're in bondage. They thought it was alcohol, and it wasn't alcohol. It's alcoholism, which goes on way after the alcohol. And so if they drink again, it's because they're scared or they're worried or what's going to happen to me. And that goes on and on and on and on. And the only thing that can release you from, so the people that are scared to talk about, so you know why they say in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we never apologize for God. We never apologize for God. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We let him demonstrate in our lives what he will do. You know why they say in the big book? Because they never apologize for God. Because they were never ashamed of God. Because they talked about God all the time and talked about the Bible. And the three books they found absolutely essential, 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. And AA is just filled with a bunch of cowards, masked by the idea that they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Or they don't want to chase away the newcomer. I can tell you this. Sometimes when, you know, they say alcoholics have mixed motives. Sometimes, you know, we have virtuous motives, but they're always hidden by mixed motives. If you want to talk about people that sit around and worry about what other people think about them, that refuse to talk the truth about what's going on here because they're worried that somebody might walk out the door and, God forbid, say, you know, that guy Russell, he said this and he made me drink. Listen, by the way, if anybody wants to use this talk as an excuse for drinking, be my guest. Be my guest, please. Come back in here and say, you know, I was doing great, and then Russell said this, and he pissed me off, and I drank, and let him say that's fine. And, you know, I mean, there are people that will believe that shit. There's nobody that could have said anything in Alcoholics Anonymous when I came in to get me to drink. You know why? Because I never wanted to drink again. Because if you're looking for an excuse to drink after coming to AA, trust me, just read the big book. Just read the 12. Just get a sponsor that actually tells you this. Just read Dr. Bob the Good Old Times. When they got them on their knees, they couldn't go to a meeting unless they got on their knees and gave their life to the Lord. Just read Dr. Bob the Good Old Times. When the first question, Bob Smith, when he sponsored somebody, he did it with Clarence Snyder. It's in the book. He walked in, he says, "You believe in God, young fella?" And Clarence said, "Well, what does that have to do with it?" And Bob Smith said this, "Everything." He says, "Well, I guess I do." He said, "Guess nothing. You either do or you don't. There is no middle of the road solution. Half measures avail you nothing. Zero. You either do or you don't." "Well, I guess I do." I said, "Well, I guess now we're getting somewhere. Get down on your knees. We're going to pray." "Well, I don't know how to pray." "Well, I suppose you don't, but I'll take you through it." I got down on my knees. There were no suggestions. I did what I was told to do. He came to AA between 1935 and 1939. That's what AA was all about. That's what they were doing. I guess they were doing it all wrong. If you get my email, read that essay from the 1950s, which is called A Strong Cup of Tea. You know, it's all about what's happened to AA ever since it first started, the changes that have happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. But here's the good news. The good news is, and I promise you this, there are people in AA that are doing it the way it was being done in 1939. Mm-hmm. I promise you, there are. They're the survivors. They're the sixth step. They're the ones that separate the men from the boys. They're the ones that are trying repeatedly to do everything they can do so that they can draw in the image and likeness of their career. I'm not making this stuff up. This is our text. This is our, I know what program you have. That's our program. Constantly trying to grow in the image and likeness of your creator. I don't know who your creator is. It's probably the doorknob. You know, I mean, with me, it would be a fat doorknob. You know what I mean? What can I tell you? I mean, I don't know what the deal is. But I know what the book says about the whole thing. So one of the things I'm going to do, I think, is I'm going to tell a couple of stories. You know, you can't, you know, after, you know, you come to AA, you have no stories. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be. You know what we have? A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to put every nut that walks through the door. You know what I mean? You know, if I was to tell, I remember one time, because I was speaking around the circuit and everything, and just for the heck of it, you know, because the problem with, you know, you learn your story. You know, we're so well defended. You can't go up to an alcoholic and say you're a banana, you're crazy or something like that. The way we get it is you got to flank them. You know, you're in a room, you hear some guy talking, you know, some gal talking, some guy talking. You say to yourself, that guy is nuts. And then all of a sudden you say, holy shit, I was doing that last week. You know what I mean? It just, other people tell your story and you think they're crazy. Then you say, wait a second, that's what I was doing, you know? And that's how you learn how crazy. And every day, once you adopt this thing, stories happen. You go to your AA group. You wouldn't believe what happened. This happened and that happened. And my, you know, my wife did this and my so-and-so did that. And I didn't, and I would usually yell and I didn't yell and scream or something happened. Or you know, not, my sponsors say 9 out of 10 things that you think are going to happen aren't going to happen. And the one thing that's going to happen is going to happen different than you happen. And you know, your boss is going to fire you. You know he's going to fire you and you can't sleep for about a week. And you finally get on your knees and you pray to God, God, please help me. I'm going to turn this over to God. And you go the next day and he gives you a raise. Yeah. And he says, oh, my God, there is a God. You can't wait to tell you, God exists. God is here until next Tuesday. And then you're worried again about something else. And then next Wednesday. And you do that for about 30 years until you become convinced, like it says in the big book. And God becomes the central fact of your life. Because in order to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and experience much of heaven, the great fact is this and nothing less, which I think means nothing less. That God has become the central fact of your life, number one. The most important thing, the central fact, which means you think about him all the time. You praise him all the time. You talk about him all the time. Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been, Bill Wilson said in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, look it up, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson, the guy in the bed, said, I knew there was something more, something that hadn't got, something a person ought to have. And I was trying to find the answer, and I was sitting in my house with Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson looked at my wife and said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. He says, I got the answer. Bill Wilson was very, very grateful for everything that happened to him, and he gave all credit to God. I got the answer. It's called it. You call this the golden text meeting. That's the golden text. Gave all credit to God. All credit to God. The God. The God of the Bible, and you want to know something, because that's what they were studying there. They knew what they were talking about. You come into AA, you got down on your knees, you walked in there, they're reading the Bible. There was no mistake as to what they were talking about when he said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me. They were what? They were unified. There was no mistake about the deal back then. And that's the deal. The Lord has been so wonderful and curious, and I'm in a group of people, everybody's sitting on their hands, scared to say anything about God because people might laugh at them. And I'll tell you, here's the secret. If you're worried about, if you're ashamed of God and you're worried about talking about God, trust me on this, you will never realize the promise of losing fear of what other people think about you. You know that probably says, the promises, it says you'll lose fear of financial insecurity and fear, what does it say? Fear of people and economic insecurity. Because economic insecurity is fear of people. Because when I used to worry about losing the car, losing the house, in the back of my mind, it was always, what will people think? If I'm not driving a Mercedes, what will people think? If I lose my house, what will people think? It's all about fear of people. You understand what I'm saying? And the bottom line is, you know, I'm not my shoes, I'm not my clothes, I'm not my car. I'm not any of that stuff anymore. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I understand where the fear is. I understand who I am now. You understand who I am and who he is. And the bottom line is that if you are sitting in an AA room reading the AA big book and sober because of God and reading the words that they have in the big book, God is everything or he is nothing. He is everything or he is nothing. Listen, here's your choice. What is your choice to be? He is everything or he is not. That's in chapter of the Gnostics. I'm going to give you a hint. This is a hint. Chapter of the Gnostics and Alcoholics. Here's a hint. In the chapter, when it talks about alcoholics and agnostics and atheists, it says this sort of thinking must be abandoned. I'm thinking there's a possibility when they say God's everything or he's nothing. I'm thinking they're coming down on the everything side. You understand? Yeah. I mean, it may not say it, but I pretty think that, especially when Dr. Bob and Dr. Bob's Nightmare says, if you're an atheist, an agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride which keeps you from understanding what we're trying to tell you, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly father will never let you down. I mean, sometimes they weren't so nice about it. They're pretty blunt, and people are still wandering around, you know, trying to figure out what's this thing all about? How am I going to change my personality? How am I going to stop worrying about what people think about me? And they're never going to do it. You know why? Because if you can't give your heart to God, and if you can't say, I am nothing, he is everything, and tell other people, there's one thing to say the Lord's Prayer. There's another thing, you know what I mean, to say the Serenity Prayer. It's another thing to say, oh, yeah, I believe in God. Even the seventh step says you can say you believe in God and your belief will be barren because he doesn't really encompass your entire life and your life isn't wrapped around him. And it's a whole other thing to proclaim God. It's a whole other thing. You know why I can proclaim God? Let me tell you something. I don't talk much different. Anybody who knows me, some of you guys have been at my meetings, knows that I talk like this at regular AA meetings.
That's right.
You know that. You know I talk like this at regular AA meetings. You know why? Because I'm not scared of them. I don't think, you know, if they laugh at me, if they roll their eyes or whatever thing, I don't judge myself by what a couple of people in an AA meeting who don't even pay my visa bill are thinking about me. You know what I mean? We're going to be drunk in 3 weeks anyway. You know what I mean? I'm not worried about them. How do you get there? How did I get there? Because I'm smarter. When I was the smartest guy in the room, I was the drunkest guy in the room. Okay, we only got about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to tell you a couple stories because our stories just goes in a general way what we used to be like, what happened. I made a list one day. I was doing nothing, and I had been speaking around. And, you know, the hardest part for me is after 40 years, think of it this way, and you guys know this. There are some guys here with a lot of time, some with a little time. You know that every day something happens to you when you're trying to work this program, and you're trying to work it out. Something happens to you, and all of a sudden you come out on the other, and it's like a miracle. You can't wait to go to a meeting and tell them, this happened, that happened. You wouldn't believe what happened. This happened. God is great. You know what? You know that. And so you constantly are accumulating stories, your own personal stories about your life. And when you get up here and they share, you connect enough stories, the problem doesn't become knowing the story. The problem it has, you have too many stories. You want to tell them this story. You want to tell them that story. You tell them three stories and then the time is over. They say, oh, I want to tell you this other story. You know what I mean? They're like children. Oh, my God, I left the baby over there, you know. And my problem is I got room for like five stories, and then that's it. It's adios muchacho, you know. And I got one story. I call it the 50-year story. It's a story that's the most miraculous change in my life, miraculous change in my life. And it's a story, And it took me 50 years to get it. 50 years. I'm not going to tell it now because I don't really have time to tell the 50-year story. But, I mean, it takes a whole hour to tell the 50-year story, believe it or not. You know, I'm not going to tell. But I want to tell you a couple stories because our stories are testimony. Our testimony. We let. That's what it says in the big book. It says we don't apologize to God. We let ourselves and our stories demonstrate what God has done for us. You understand? And you know what? They asked Jesus once, why was this man crippled? Why was this man made to be an alcoholic? You know, I now know why I'm an alcoholic. You know, alcoholics, when they first come in, they ask themselves a lot of questions that are not good questions because they'll never understand them. You know, they'll never understand them. They ask, why am I an alcoholic? They worry about, why am I an alcoholic? Why am I not? Oh, it's just driving them crazy. You can't explain it to them. Just like you can't explain to them, like it says in the big book, for later on, as you get mature, it says things, we learn the value of suffering. You ever hear that? It's in the, we learn the value. You ever hear this thing in the big book? The way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations, the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. You ever see in the big book in 12:12, it says pain is necessary. It's the growth point by pain. Yeah, try to tell that to a guy who's got 1 week, whose wife left him and kid left him and he's broke and he's living on the street. Say, oh, you're learning the value of suffering. See how that's working out. You know what I mean? No, they need encouragement. They say, listen, you haven't had a drink again. You're a winner. They need encouragement. But, you know, there reaches a point in time after you go through stuff, just like in Book of James, which is one of the primary books they use, where you understand that the trials and the tribulations, as you rejoice in them, you do them, and you persevere and you focus on God, you become closer to him and you grow and you get stronger. So by the time, you know how you learn how to be broke and not drink, to be broke and not only not drink, but to help other people while you're broke. You know how you learn how to be broke and not drink and help other people and love on other people and don't let it keep you up at night and turn it over to God. You know, you got to be broke. You got to be broke. Woo. Not one time, not three times, maybe over 10 to 20 or 30 years, about 5,000 times before he says, oh, it's that thing again. It's no big deal. You know, you got to go through the jungle. You got to get beat up, you know. That's the deal. That's what has to happen. So they used to say to me when I came in, it says, well, after 5 years, your head comes out of your ass or something like that, pops out. And my sponsor said, I don't consider you sober until you have 10 years. And I got 10 years. And I said, well, I'm sober now. He says, nah, I'm at 20. You know what I mean? And I go to meetings where guys say something and I understand it. They say, I didn't realize what this thing was really about until I had 25 years. I go to meetings where guys say, I didn't realize what was going on here until I had 25 years. And I'll have a guy come up to me and I'll have 5 or 10 years and he'll start worrying and crying about something that's going on in his life that he really can't share at A meetings because he's got 10 years. And everybody looks up to him and he sponsors people and I'll say, listen, don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. You just don't drink and go to meetings and you do what you're doing. You're doing the whole thing. And I said, you're going to be okay. He said, yeah, 10, 15 years. It's going to go away. He says, trust me, 10 or 15 years, you'll be fine. You know, they sort of giggle. They think that maybe I'm lying. It's sort of like a nervous giggle, though. You know what I mean? They're thinking he may be telling because it doesn't work like scotch. Here's the way scotch works. Whack, whack. I'm king of the jungle. I walk into a bar. There's 100 people. I'm worried about what they're going to think about me, whether they're going to like me, whether they're not going to like me, whether they're going to accept me in the group. Whack, whack. I feel like I own the freaking group. You know, I'm in charge. I'm the president of the group. You know, there's a good looking gal there. I want to ask her to dance. I want to ask her to do a whole bunch of other things because I want what she has. And I'm willing to go to any length to get it. But I'm scared that she's going to laugh at me. I'm scared she's going to laugh at me. I take that scotch. I go whack, whack. I go up to her. She says, get out of here. I says, hey, you're a loss, honey. You know what I mean? It's the greatest stuff in the world. I'll tell you something. You may have to go to 50 or 60 meetings to get the same effect of like one jigger of scotch, you know? So, okay, 15 minutes left. Two stories. Getting off this thing. Two stories. Because every story has truth in it. So I'm going to call this Looking for Leos and Following the Miners. These are true stories. It has to do with my life and it has to do with alcoholism. And, you know, you'll get out of it whatever you'll get out of it. But I can tell you that. Well, I can tell you this, the truth. And I was just thinking about these things. And it involves, you know, and it's about alcoholism and it's about recovery and it's about what it takes and how to do it. And I'm not even sure it involves alcoholics or Or maybe it does. I don't know. You'll figure it out. You know, maybe it'll mean something to you. Maybe you'll never forget it. Maybe 10 years from now, you'll still be saying, I remember this guy told a story about the miners, about Leo. You know what I mean? Maybe. You never know, right? Maybe it'll piss you off. That's even better. You know, if I'm not pissing off 20% of people I'm talking about, I'm not saying shit. You know what I mean? I'm not saying anything. 90% of the growth I had and the epiphanies I had was walking out of me and saying, that guy's an asshole. Who the hell invited him? Because what happens when you hate somebody and, you know, what has to happen is you're going to drink unless you somehow resolve that. You do a four-step on it because whenever you're disturbing what the cause is, something wrong with you. You talk to your sponsor. You get down on your knees. You try to resolve it. You say, holy shit, that guy was right. You know, and then you know, guys come up and he says, I used to hate you, but now I love you, you know, and it's crap, you know. So here's the deal. So this is a true story, by the way. You can look it up. I forget some of the names, like Henry Fairweather, and, you know, there was all these names of people, and I forget them. I should look them up one day, but there was in Virginia City, and it was actually Banna, Montana. This was after the California gold strike. There was a secondary gold strike in Montana, in Banna, Montana, around where the Virginia City area was. And it was one of the largest gold and silver strikes in the United States. And it was next to Indian territory where the Crows were. And white men and, you know, non-Indians weren't allowed to go there. And there were these 300... miners that went up there to mine for gold, and there were these seven miners. I forgot, one guy's name was Barney, the other guy's name was Henry Fairweather or stuff like that, and they didn't get with the 300, so they left, you know, after the 300 left, they left following them, and they got captured. But this is a true story. They got captured by Indians. You look up Grasshopper Creek, that's where they started finding the gold. They got captured by the Crow Indians. And what happened was they got held there, and then they escaped, except for one guy who was like a half-breed who stayed behind or something. But they escaped, and they were going back to Banner, Montana to get supplies and everything like that. And they camped at this spot, and it was called Grasshopper Creek. And so they were just sitting there, and one of the miners, I think it was Fairweather, Barney, saw some rim rock, started hitting it, and he found gold. And so for the next 3 or 4 hours, they're looking at the thing, and they found like about $1,000 worth of gold. No, I mean, I don't know what that means, and that's when $1,000 was $1,000. And I don't know what that means to you if you went into your backyard and found $1,000 lying on the ground, you know what I mean? But it was a big deal because they knew they had hit a mother load, a major vein. But they also knew that unless they worked the claim, they could lose it. So they had to get back in the Bannon, and they had to get tools and utensils and come back. And everybody gave a solemn promise that they wouldn't say anything to anybody. You got it? So they go, and Henry Traficante used to say, he's a mafioso guy, the only way to keep a secret among three people is to have to die. So they went back to Banner, Montana. They loaded up with supplies. They said they were going to meet at the old oak tree. They went to the old oak tree, and 300 miners followed them. And he knew, Fairweather knew somebody had spilled the beans. So he goes up to the lead guy who's leading the 300 people, and he says, who spilled the beans? He says, who told you? He says, nobody. He said, nobody. He said, nobody. He says, no. We could see it in your eyes. We knew you had hit the mother load. We could just look at you, and we knew you had hit the mother load. And you know the secret of my sobriety is? I've been following the miners for 40 years.
That's right.
I've been following the miners. I don't follow the snickers. I don't find the guys in the parking lot are smoking and talking about getting laid. I don't follow all the bullshit artists in here, all the alcohol. You know, the St. Will People's Anonymous. Have you ever figured that out? You know, I follow the men, you know, who are talking the talk and walking the walk and trying. I follow the servants, you know, because that's the leaders, because there are leaders in here. You may not like it. They're trusted. You can always spot a leader. They serve. They serve. That's what they do. Leaders serve. You know, they carry God's message and they serve, and they don't worry about anything else. They don't hang around with the bullshit. You know what I mean? That's what it is. And I follow the miners. And That's that. And that's the truth, you know. And I, when I first came in there, I thought, well, this is all about osmosis. You got to just hang around the right guys. And it's true. And then I realized, no, you got to actually do shit, you know. And if you follow the right guys, you will do the stuff. Because they won't allow you to get away with not doing the stuff. You know what I mean? The fourth step, the fifth step. You'll have to do what you got to do. And so that's what the situation is. And the second story is, so I'm always looking for the miners. I'm always looking for the men who I want with. It says, what is it? You know, there's a step before the steps. Did you know that? If you want what we have and you're willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to take it. Hey, listen, you don't have a we. You don't have somebody. You want what they have. Then you don't want what they have. You want what you used to have.
That's right.
You want what you used to have. Or you're not ready, willing to go to any length to get it. You don't have. You got to find yourself a we in here. I don't care what it is. Say, I want what that. I had a lot of we's. Because who you follow and who you hang around in the next 5 years is going to be where you're going to be. Yeah. It's going to determine the books you read and where you're going to be. So one day I'm you know, when I was about 10 or 11 years sober, I started going to Bible study. And I'm a Jewish kid. I'm not even going to go into that. So I'm a Jewish kid from Great Neck, Long Island. But I started going to Bible study. Accepted Jesus in my life. That's a whole other story. It's 3 hours long, and I'm not going to do it. But now I'm not going to tell it. But here's the deal. I don't have to tell it. You know, you can see it. But the bottom line is, tell it. I demonstrate it, you know. I'm standing up here talking about it. I'm demonstrating. What do I got to tell? I got on my knees, gave my life to Jesus on December 25th, 1980. All you got to do is see me. Talk. Listen to me for 5 minutes. You know where I'm coming from. You don't have to tell anybody. If you love the Lord and you love people and you're filled with the Holy Spirit, you don't have to say, oh, let me explain this to you. You know, you got guys in there saying, what the hell is going on with that son of a bitch? You know what I mean? Hey, come on. You have to believe that's crazy stuff. You speak with an unction, you know, because it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you. So I'm driving in my car. And, you know, I used to go to meetings. You see, I used to go to meetings because I didn't want to drink. And there is nothing wrong with going to meetings because you don't want to drink. I probably spent 5 to 10 years going to meetings because I didn't want to drink. I would say things like, I needed this meeting. And you know, some I still go to meetings because I don't want to drink. But that's not the primary reason I go to meetings. It's not because I'm a big shot or I think I will never drink again. As a matter of fact, I absolutely believe that with my disease, I can be drunk in an hour. I could walk out of here an hour later and be drunk. If that happened, you say, well, it's just like he said. You know what I mean? If I'm not in God's grace and I'm not doing what I believe, it says he'll give me everything I need. He says, stay close to him and perform his work. Well, I know what his work is. His work is very simple. It says, be a master of service to him and other people. Carry this message to other people. Love on other people. Assume everybody, you know, treat everybody like they have a broken heart, because they probably do. You know, they have a broken heart. You know, love on them. Sometimes love on them can be like what I call loving sarcasm. You know, I call my sponsor and say, I got a flat tire. I'm in the middle of Rue Hassan. I have a flat tire. He says, oh, you have a car? You know, oh, my boss is an ass. He says, oh, you have a job? I stopped calling the son of a bitch. You know, I know what he's going to say. So I'm driving around in my car. So I started going to Bible study because I wanted more, because I hit the glass ceiling. I was going to a million meetings, sponsoring a million guys, banquet chairman for 2 years in a row, 8 years on the relay, you know, going to meetings, you know, speaking in different parts of the country, doing all that bit. I was doing it, and I had hit a ceiling where I wasn't drinking, but it wasn't. I felt stuck. Some guy suggested I go to Bible study. I said, well, I don't go to Bible studies because isn't that, I don't think they approved that in AA. I don't even know where I got that from. I got it from some guy who sort of rolled his eyes, I guess, because I was so worried about what people think about me. But somehow I got in my head some sort of spiritual epiphany that I should never stop. I should never not do something because I'm scared. Because I'm scared. So I went to the Bible study. It's okay. I like children in AA. My mom was an alcoholic, you know, and I love to see mommies and daddies in AA. It doesn't bother me. It bothers me when they're not here. But in any event, so I was going to Bible study. So I had in my car, I'd have the big book, the 12 and 12. I'd have a huge Bible sitting there. And I pull up to this dry cleaner, which was at my house, next to my house at that period of time. You can see my house from the dry cleaner. I pull up the drive-in, and there's this kid there. He's like 16 years old. And I can't even explain this to you. I still don't understand today when I see it. And he was wearing his jeans by his knees. Has anybody ever seen this?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen this?
Oh, yeah.
I don't even understand how they hold them up. You know, my stuff starts moving down because I'm fat and my stuff, you know, and I got to pull it up, you know. How do they keep, somebody's going to have to explain to me the secret of that. They're literally on their knees and they're walking around with it. And, you know, he was doing that. And I was picking up my, and he says, hey, man, I got one of those. He was, you see what I'm doing? He was pointing. I got one of those. I said, what do I want? He says, one of those. And he was pointing at a big red King James Bible there. I said, oh, you mean a Bible? He says, yeah. He says, I said, you ever read it? He said, oh, yeah. He says, I don't really understand it much. I said, what's your name? He says, my name is Leo. I said, Leo, you see that house over there, over all the things? He says, oh, yeah, I see it. He says, that's my house. I said, every Thursday morning at 7:30, I go to a Bible study. I said, if you're at my house tomorrow morning, which is Thursday morning at 7:30, I will take you to the Bible study where they read it and you can learn some stuff. He said, really? I said, absolutely. And then I left and I forgot all about Leo. Forgot all about him. Okay? It's a true story. So because let me tell you something. I'm out there to try to love on other people and try to help other people and be a maximum service. You don't have to have a medallion in your pocket for me to love you, for me to try to help you, you know? I mean, that's just the way it is, you know? And so the next morning I wake up, it's around 7:15, and I'm walking out the door, and I had forgotten all about Leo. And there's Leo. He's sitting by my car. You know, he's got like a Bible and he's sitting by my car. I said, hey, how you doing? He says, fine. I said, so you ready for the Bible study? He says, yeah. So I drive him over to the Bible study. There's about 30 guys there. These are mostly old guys. You know, I was the youngest guy. I was like 40, 45, something like that. You know, something like that. And these are guys like are 70, 80, hardcore, you know, serious, you know, Christians and everything like that. And my sponsor was there, John Glenn. He had like 60 years in the program. But he was, you know, these are serious guys. And so I sit this guy down. Now, you understand, these guys are all, their bags are packed. They're ready to go. You know what I mean? It's adios. You know, I mean, they're serious contenders. They know the Bible backwards. And here this kid walks in. He's like 16 years old. He's like red meat. You know what I mean? They're like so excited to see him. And so he sits there and we go through the entire, I don't know what we're reading. We go through the entire thing. Everybody talks or whatever it is. And they read the deal. And at the very end, he raised his hand. He says, yeah. He says, I think Jesus was an alien. And he said, yeah. He says, they, you know what they said? They said, hey, keep coming back. You know what I mean? Because they're Christians, you know? They keep coming back, kid. You know, they love the kid. So the kid gets in my car, and I'm driving away, and he said, I said, they loved you. They loved you, kid. You were great. You're fantastic. So I'm driving him back, and he says, could you do me a favor? I said, sure. No problem. He says, would you... instead of taking me back to your, would you take me over to my house? I said, sure, I have no problem with that. I said, you have to tell me how to get there. And he said, so we start driving, and he starts telling me about himself, that he's a young kid, you know, he's just a young 16-year-old kid. You know, he's got a single mother, he's got a 3-year-old sister from another guy. She's not married, you know, it's like one of those deals. And he's working at the deal, and he doesn't have any men in his life, you know, to guide him. Just a young 16-year-old kid trying to find out what the frick is going on in the world, you know what I mean? And trying to figure things out and do this kind of stuff. So I said, okay, so how do I get? And he said, well, I get the house. He says, well, keep on going down over the stop sign. You go down the stop sign. He says, well, make a right. So I make a right. And he says, go down there and make a left. And you go right, left, right, left. And we do this for about 10 minutes. And about 7 miles down the road, you know, 10, 15, 7 miles down the road, he says, that's my townhouse over there. And so, you know, we just, so I say to the kid, I said, so how'd you get to my house? He said, I walked. He got up at 3:30 in the morning. He showered and he walked, and he actually got to my house like 45 minutes earlier because he didn't want to miss me. And I got guys in AA, you know, they'll say, you know, you be my son. I say, sure. I said, why don't you come down to my group? It's down in Miami. He says, it's too far. They want to know what it takes to get this thing. I'll tell you what it gets. You got to have the heart of a Leo.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And you got to hang out with the miners. You got to have a heart of the Leos. I'm always looking for the Leos. I'm always hanging out with the miners. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. Stevie B, recovering alcoholic. This is my home group, the Golden Text Group. So honored to have Russell here. And great to see some of the guys that we know online. Great to have Michael Chornalone coming in from the Ukraine. And hi, Cindy, Jersey Shore. So this is what I want to share with you. 20 years ago in January, I had slid into Christmas, and I got high one more time underneath the stairs of my house. My parents found me there. It was January 2nd. And I caught a 6-felony car crash deal. And I said to my dad, I said, Dad, take me down to this meeting that I had been at while I was in treatment down there. Because there was this guy, Russell, and he was doing a step series, and I knew that it was something different. I had just had 7 years, but I just knew there was something different in what Russell was saying. And when I walked in that room that day, and I sat down, and I was only a couple hours sober, and I had just, as I said, I just relapsed, Russell opened up the Bible in an AA meeting. I knew it was going to be bad stuff. I know, because I've seen it. I've seen people, Johnny's seen it, we've seen it, Pat's seen it, people open up the Bible in AA, and that's it. They take them outside and they tar and feather them and hang them up by the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And Russell started talking about that. You have to act a good Samaritan. And the good Samaritan is from our 12th step. You got to act a good Samaritan every day. But he read the good Samaritan out of the Bible. And my jaw dropped. And I realized I had been in a different AA for 6.5 years. I had been in AA with a God of my understanding, which was misunderstanding. And I knew right there and right then that I wanted what he had. And I started following him from a halfway house in a rented car up here in on Davie Road and 95. And I started following him and going down there and going to Bible studies with these old guys and traveling to California with these guys, traveling to California with his sponsor, John Glenn. And wherever he said go, even on the week that my grandmother passed away, may God rest her soul, was the same week that we were going on a conference, Celebrate Recovery, 20 years ago. And Russell said, you could still make it. And I flew out there by myself, but not with all the guys. And I've been following him around for the last 19 and a half years. God willing, it'll be 20 in January. This is what I want to tell you, as I always tell you every single week. This is not for the people that are trying to get this by osmosis or asmosis or buttmosis. This is for the people that want to follow and know that you're a minor, and that's why your faith says you're a minor. I was saying to James, they'll never sit in the same row with me again after what just happened here. But when you know that you know that you know that for me, that Jesus is my Lord and Savior. Okay, now, this is AA, but this is our AA group. And that in our AA group, our deal here is we just say it. When you know God, the real God, the God that Russell described, you're not going to be able to contain yourself. You're going to be so excited to be around people like this because they're telling the truth. And the truth will always set us free. Amen. And Russell says that it'll piss you off first.
Well, right? I'll tell you this. If you're not excited about the Lord, if you're not excited about God, why are you following the God you're following? I mean, really, if you're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old, this ain't a dress rehearsal, and you're not so excited about God and what he's done for you that you can't help but talk about it, then I feel sorry for you if you're not proclaiming, I feel sorry for you if you're not excited about your God. So excited that you're talking about, and what it means is you don't really believe you have a God.
And Russell,
because if you believed you had a God, you'd be going nuts. And that's a different type of AA.
How long did your mom have?
What?
25 years?
My mom had 19 years.
19? Listen, his mom had 19 years.
She started Atheists and Alcoholics
Anonymous. But she's Atheists and Alcoholics Anonymous. Famous person. Atheist and Alcoholics Anonymous
what do they call that group? The
Freethinkers. They were anything but. Listen, if I could throw him so much, let me just say, if we could go on the show on the road with just me, just throwing him all his own stories.
Right.
So let's thank Russell once again.
Thank you.